Okay, Donald Trump, the president, is about to speak, folks. Let's grab this. If we tell me when you have it there. Go.
You can't really do this because you send in 200 men to pick up one, and it's something that's usually not attempted as much as you want to attempt, and bad things happen to that one or two, and in this case we did two, and it might not have been attempted before, but we did, and we had great talent, but we got a little luck too, I would say, and we were helped by a lot of people, a lot of great people, and it was an honor to be involved with it. It's very historic. This is a rescue that's very historic. It'll go down in the books. Late Thursday night, an American F-15 fighter jet went down deep inside enemy territory in Iran while participating in Operation Epic Fury, where we're doing unbelievably well, well at a level that nobody's ever seen before. The entire country can be taken out in one night, and that night might be tomorrow night. Both members of the crew ejected from the aircraft and landed alive on Iranian soil. I immediately was asked to make a decision. I ordered the U.S. Armed Forces to do whatever was necessary to bring our brave warriors back home. A risky decision, because we could have ended up with 100 dead as opposed to one or two. It's a hard decision to make. But in the United States military, we leave no American behind. We don't do it. Within hours, our armed forces deployed 21 military aircraft into hostile airspace, many flying at very low altitude, being shot by bullets. You bring rifles into play when you're going that low, but there are also certain advantages. And in broad daylight over Iran for 7 hours at times facing very, very heavy enemy fire. We have a helicopter that's got a lot of bullets in it. It's amazing. We just realized how good those weapons are. Our machines are. Nobody has the equipment that we have. Nobody has the military that we have. Not even close. We're the most powerful military anywhere in the world by far. The flight crews and warfighters aboard those aircraft took extraordinary risks to rescue their fellow service members. This first wave of search and rescue forces successfully located the pilot of the F-15, and he was extracted from enemy territory by an HH-60 Jolly Green 2 helicopter. Fabulous machine, as our warriors faced gunfire at very close range. It's amazing that when you look at the machinery, what happened, that nobody was even injured. Meanwhile, the second crew member, a weapons system officer, highly respected colonel, had landed a significant distance away from the pilot. When you're going at those speeds, even if you go out 2 or 3 seconds later, it's miles. It's miles and miles away because you're going fast. He was injured quite badly and stranded in an area teeming with terrorists from the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, rough group, as well as besieged militia and local authorities. Many, on top of everything else, they told the communities actually within inside of Iran, the people of Iran, they were given a tremendous incentive to find this pilot. Despite the peril, the officer followed his training and climbed into the treacherous mountain terrain and started climbing toward a higher altitude, something they were trained to do in order to evade capture. They want to always go as far away from the site of the shoot down. They want to go as far away because they all head right to that site. You want to be as far away as you can. And he was injured, and he was an amazing, amazing thing. He scaled cliff faces, bleeding rather profusely, treated his own wounds, and contacted American forces to transmit his location. They have a very sophisticated beeper-type apparatus that is on them at all times. And when they go out on these missions, they make sure they have lots of battery space, and they're in good shape. And this one worked really well, amazingly, saved his life. We immediately mobilized a massive operation to retrieve him from the mountain holdout. And he kept going higher and higher. The mountain kept getting rougher and rougher and really very, very hard to find. The second rescue mission involved 155 aircraft, including 4 bombers, 64 fighters, 48 refueling tankers, 13 rescue aircraft, and more. We were bringing them all over, and a lot of it was subterfuge. We wanted to have them think he was in a different location because they had a vast military force out there. Thousands of people were looking. So we wanted them to look in different areas, so we were scattered all over like we were right on top of them. We had 7 different locations where they thought, and they were very confused. They said, well, wait a minute, they've got groups there. It's an amazing thing. I was listening to these great people, these great generals, General Raisin Kane, who's amazing, and Pete Hegseth was amazing. But I listened to the whole thing. It was pretty amazing. So they had all these different sites where everybody thought he was located. We think we have him over there because they have 9 planes circling a little area that's 25 miles down the coast. So in a breathtaking show of skill and precision, lethality and force, America's military descended on the area, the real area, engaged the enemy, rescued the stranded officer, destroyed all threats, and exited Iranian territory while taking no casualties of any kind. The heroic F-15 weapon system officer had evaded capture on the ground in Iran for almost 48 hours. That's a long time when you're in tough shape and when you're bleeding. It's a long time. When we left, as you probably know, we had 2 large planes, pretty old planes. It carried a lot. We needed a lot more equipment going in than coming out, obviously, because going in, we needed to be able to scale mountains. And we had a lot of equipment, but the sand was sandy, wet sand. So we thought there may be a problem taking off because of the weight of the plane. And then we also had all the men jumping back onto the planes, and they got pretty well bogged down. And we had a contingency plan, which was unbelievable, where lighter, faster aircraft came in and they took them out. We blew up the old planes. We blew them up to smithereens because we had equipment on the planes that, frankly, we'd like to take, but I don't think it was worthwhile spending another 4 hours there taking it off. So we didn't want anybody to have, we have the best equipment anywhere in the world. We didn't want anybody examining our anti-aircraft and other equipment. So these were large planes that were old and pretty old, and we blew them up, and we had faster, lighter planes come in, and they were able to land on the sand. We needed the bigger planes because we had so much equipment that we needed. We took 3 helicopters over there, which were very strongly used and couldn't have lived without them. They did, and they performed unbelievably well. And if you'd see it, you wouldn't believe it. They came off the plane, and these guys had them, the rotors were off. They rebuilt these helicopters in less than 10 minutes. And that was one of the more amazing things. These are helicopters. Small, unbelievably powerful, but small, very small, so it can get into certain areas. And they got them off the plane, and they rebuilt all 3 of them in a matter of less than 10 minutes. It's pretty amazing what the genius of these people. Who would think that? You'd think it would take 5 days to build them. And in some companies, it would take 5 days, and they wouldn't do it well. But they served us well. As Commander-in-Chief, I never forget the extraordinary risk taken by the warriors that we send into battle and the genius. I mean, think of it, having a contingency of 3 planes waiting because we think the sand is so bad that we probably won't be able to take off. And the planes really got bogged. The sand was, this was not much of a runway. This was a farm, not a runway. It's a farm, but it did the trick. But to have a contingency as opposed to having to wait 2 days, can you imagine right in the middle? This was central. This was right, you would call it central casting if you were doing a movie for location. and probably the toughest area of Iran where we'd be sitting there. So these planes came in, those pilots came in so fast and so quick and got out of there. Everybody got aboard and just got 15-minute intervals. One load out, one load out, one load out. The three. It happened, and we were watching, and we said, that's amazing. In many ways, I was almost more impressed by the contingency that we had than the fact that, you know, if we would have had a runway or decent soil, but it was an amazing thing. But we thank God for every single one of them. And the talent, the genius is not even talent, it's genius. It's the whole ball game, every one of them. If you look at what we did with Maduro, we went into a military compound, a massive, with thousands and thousands of soldiers, and within a matter of minutes, and he lived behind iron doors. There were steel doors, broke them down so quickly, and within almost minutes, he was in the back of these planes. It was a similar group. Incredible. We have incredibly talented people. And if the time comes, we move heaven and earth to bring them home safely. We're going to bring our people home safely. I want to thank every member of the U.S. Armed Forces involved in these historic operations. They really were historic. It's just not something that's done. And you'd understand it. Not that they don't want to do it, but when you're going into areas, when you look at these helicopters, when you look at the amount of bullets and everything else that they took, when you go into these areas, you don't come out like we came out. God was watching us, I tell you. Well, it was the Easter. We were in Easter territory, I guess. But God was watching us. Amazing. Because when you look at the machinery, they took damage. It tells you, first thing I said is, these are unbelievable machines, how they flew back and not even much of a problem. But these two extraordinary rescues, because it was two, and as you probably know, we didn't talk about the first one for an hour. Then somebody leaked something, which we'll hopefully find that leaker. We're looking very hard to find that leaker. And talked about there's somebody missing. They basically said that we have one and there's somebody missing. Well, they didn't know there was somebody missing until this leaker gave the information. So whoever it was, we think we'll be able to find it out because we're going to go to the media company that released it, and we're going to say, national security, give it up or go to jail. And we know who, and you know who we're talking about, because some things you can't do. Because when they did that, all of a sudden, the entire country of Iran knew that there was a pilot that was somewhere on their land that was fighting for his life. And it also made it much more difficult for the pilots and for the people going in to search for him. All of a sudden, they know that there's somebody out there. They see all these planes coming in. It became a much more difficult operation because a leaker leaked that we have one, we've rescued one, but there's another one out there that we're trying to get. So actually, the country, Iran, put out a major notice, you all saw it, offering a very big award for anybody that captures the pilot. So in addition to a hostile, very talented, very good, very evil military, we had millions of people trying to get an award. So when you add that to it, but we have to find that leaker because that's a sick person. Probably didn't realize the extent of how bad it was. I can't imagine that the person did, but we're going to find out. It's national security, and the person that did the story will go to jail if he doesn't say, and that doesn't last long, and I think everybody would understand it. They put this mission at great risk. They put that man at great risk, and they put the hundreds of people that went in looking for him, because everyone now knows that we're going in. Over the past 37 days, America's armed forces have carried out more than 10,000 combat flights over Iran, unheard of, striking more than 13,000 targets. The F-15 we lost last week was the first manned aircraft downed by the enemy in this entire operation with thousands and thousands of flights. They got lucky. It was a lucky hit. You know, eventually you get lucky. But we got lucky, too, because we got both of them back. But it's a record that is unparalleled in the history of military air operations. Nobody's ever seen anything like it. It's such an honor to be involved with it. We were up late at night, and then we were waiting for those contingent planes to come in, and we said, come on, let's go get in, because they're waiting out on this farm without a runway, with wet, crummy soil, sand, mostly sand, wet sand, and it eats planes alive, and we're waiting, and we're saying, I hope that one can land and take off. And they came in like magic, boom, 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 one after another. It was like genius. I'm so impressed by that. Because we were a little concerned. We said, boy, if they don't get in and get up fast, we're sitting in them. And that's called Iran Prime, right, General? That's where the whole bed is. And here we are sitting there waiting for a plane. But they came in so fast and so hard, and these guys knew exactly what to do. Let's go. Come on. Get in. Let's go. Pwah. They came one right after another, not at the same time. They don't want to come at the same time. They had to come right after each other. They didn't have any room. There was barely any room to land. Tiny little patch of very wet earth and sand. So I'm so proud of the people that I have standing up here with me and many others that worked. I mean, so many. Steve Witkoff's over here. He's doing fantastically. Jared Kushner. But the people that are here, the job they did is amazing. And I think I'm going to introduce the head of the CIA. And he is a man who, he's central casting, okay? If we cast a movie, he's going to play the head of the CIA. He's one of the few. John Ratcliffe, he did a phenomenal job that night. He did something that I don't know if you want to talk about it. If you want, you can. I'm not sure he's supposed to. I'm not going to talk about it. But the CIA was very responsible for finding this little speck. It's like they used an expression on one of the shows. A general was talking about, it's like finding a needle in a haystack, finding this pilot. And the CIA was unbelievable. And you may, if you can, you'll talk, it might be classified, in which case I'd have to put him in jail if he talks about it. And I don't want to put him in jail. He doesn't deserve that. So, John, do you want to say a few
words?
Folks,
Morgan Griffin here. Obviously, the president, as he continues, if there's new information, we will pop back in. But, all right. Weird Friday. I get sent a bunch of video from a parking lot in Katanning, outside of Katanning. And it's a PennDOT facility. And it's packed with semis. And then my source goes inside and shoots a... it's crazy, actually. Shoots a bunch of video with a bunch of men lined up against a wall, all speaking languages that I don't understand. Turns out they're from Uzbekistan, Kyrgyzstan, Turkmenistan, I believe. Then I get a third video from my source with state police pulling up and with ICE pulling up. And they made a significant number of arrests. Fascinating to me. Number one, those men who pulled up there, they thought we're cool. They thought I'm just going to get a license. They're now in jail. New day, new game, new rules. Joseph Patrick Murphy, my man, best immigration lawyer I know. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, good afternoon, Marty.
This is weird how this went down. They pull up as if it's business as usual. They end up in cuffs and in cars, deported. Why were they wrong, and why is this happening? Fascinating.
Right. So we got to start with the analysis. Handcuffs and arrest, we normally think of that as someone doing a crime.
Yep.
And these guys were just in line trying to renew their license. No one's claiming, not even ICE is claiming that they did a crime. They're claiming that they're unlawfully present in the United States. So it's a civil matter, but they're going to have to physically take these people into custody because they're the problem. They want to deport them. So the fact that they were standing around doing nothing wrong.
Yeah.
It doesn't really solve the problem. As citizens, we're free from arrest if we are sitting around doing nothing wrong. But these people have that kind of original sin. Many of them entered the country without papers during the last administration, made asylum claims or other sorts of claims, that enabled them to get driver's licenses and even CDLs. And there's a whole sub-industry here of these people, most of them from countries with a name that end in Stan, you're correct. You stop at any of the big truck stops. Emlinton is classic for that. It's full of people speaking this.
Wow.
And they also, a lot of them speak Russian. For whatever reason, that part of the world generates a lot of people who are interested in getting here and driving a truck. It's also a fascinating thing because renewing these truck driver licenses has become quite difficult. If you remember, there were a couple high-profile cases where a foreign truck driver, usually who got the license in California, ended up getting in an accident, killing people, and they've really clamped down on this, and I suspect this is just another dimension of that clamping down.
What's fascinating is what you said, and I don't want to gloss over it, brother. Okay. Old administration allowed them to get licenses, yes? And why did they?
So people, the vast majority of them came in and made political asylum claims. We generally extend quite a lot of freedoms to asylum seekers because they're going to have to live here for a couple of years while that case works its way through the system. We let them work. We let them earn, which very few foreigners are allowed to do in this country, because if we don't let them work and earn, we're going to have to provide for feed them, clothe them, house them ourselves out of tax dollars.
Sure.
Or God forbid, they resorted to stealing. But so we extend asylum seekers the ability to work in the United States. You could theoretically become a lawyer if you had enough time waiting and work as a lawyer with that work permit. And these guys have decided to get into over-the-road truck driving. It's good money, especially compared to what they'd make at home. It wasn't necessarily the administration that let them drive trucks. What it was is the administration let them in into the United States. They made asylum claims. The asylum claims resulted in the issuance of federal work permits. With those federal work permits and the social security numbers they also get, they're able to apply for commercial driver's licenses and they're lawful to employ. So they're going for the fastest route to the biggest check they can. Many of them, the claims are sketchy. And I've seen a lot of it. Really, really not so nice work. And once in a while, it's kind of sad because, one of these guys will come in and say, hey, wait a minute, I really would like to fit in here. Can you help me? And it's too late. You told these stories. I can't unring that bell. So it's a tough one.
So now they get deported, right?
Yeah. I mean, if you enter, well, what they'll do, the ones that have made no claims, the ones that just walked in and maybe they had a parole or something, and that would enable them to get a permit too. If the status is over, they're not getting out. If they've got an asylum claim going, they'll make them present that claim from jail. I had to do one of those last summer with a Chinese lady. She converted to Christianity in a communist country. This is something of a no-no. And got caught in the raid of an underground church.
Wow.
Eventually, she made her way to California and walked into the United States and asked for asylum. They grabbed her and her citizen husband. They grabbed them at a stop sign, took her into jail, immigration detention. And she hired me, because we had to put that asylum claim on. Like, I had to prepare her behind bars. They wouldn't let her out of jail even for her trial. Luckily, she won that, which is very rare now, and she's out. But that's not the same case for everybody else. They're not all real obvious political asylum claims. Christians in communist countries, those are generally pretty well understood claims. But these exotic and unusual things that people, there have been document preparers that help these people make up these sketchy stories. A lot of these guys are going to say, I'm not even going to bother arguing that. I'll just go home.
Joseph Patrick Murphy. Hey, man, how does ICE end up there? Tipped off? What? What happens? How's
easy
that go
enough,
down?
Easy enough. These databases, commercial driver's licenses are tracked by the federal government.
Oh.
PennDOT, now you have to make an appointment. I know that some of them still have walk-in. I think downtown you have to take a number. I think Bridgeville might accept walk-ins. But most of these PennDOT driver's license centers, especially with a commercial driver's license, you have to make an appointment. That would be connected to whatever records they had of why you're allowed to have a work permit when those expired or the status. The federal government, looks at the databases that the state maintains. Look at the courthouse arrests. We have
something here in Pennsylvania
called AOP. We have AOPC, Administrative Office of Pennsylvania Courts. They keep a system called UJS Portal. You can look up your preliminary hearing criminal cases. You could look them up online. Institutions, law firms, certainly government agencies can buy or demand that data in bulk. And then they just cross-reference new charges with lists of people they let in the United States, lists of statuses that are expired. And, oh, but that one's one of the, we're looking for this guy. There's no record of this guy ever being let into the United States legally. Well, then we're going to go there and arrest him and let a judge figure out what happens.
Hey, man, what happens to the trucks?
That's a good one. Many of those trucks are financed. Ultimately, they end up back with the finance company and perhaps resold.
Wow.
Well, your question relates more to the problem of leaving the toys out in the playroom.
I don't know.
I mean, it's pretty tough to tow one of those things, especially if it's got a full load in it. Sometimes the loads are perishable if they're a refrigerated truck. Most of these guys tend up drive for Amazon. They love Amazon. Amazon's got lots of work now. That's how they make those quick deliveries. And Amazon's the big consumer of these services, picking up loads from Amazon. And they really crack the whip over these guys. I mean, they've got it down to the minute.
Wow.
We have one case where a guy got in a physical fight with a foreman at an Amazon transfer station right around here because it was 1 minute late. And it came to blows. So it's they run a tight ship over there. Yeah.
One of my boys says that they were tipped off by locals. ICE was. There we go.
Well, how would the locals know how to? I mean, maybe,
how would they know that these guys were from these countries? How would they even know?
Well, I mean, to look at them, you know, they're. I mean, we've always had people from Uzbekistan and Turkmenistan and these different stands in the United States, but not many. And they're, I guess they're Asian people, but they don't look like any kind of Asians, you know, we're used to seeing, like Japanese people, Chinese people, Koreans. They look something somewhere in between. So they're a very exotic looking group of people on average. There's variations. Some of them look just like us. But
I'm looking at them right now. They're young. They're young too, brother. Young.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Early 20s to maybe mid 30s. It's over the road truck driver's a tough job, especially given the kind of transitory statuses these people have been able to put together with bubblegum and coat hangers under the Biden administration. They know they're not going to be here all that long. Most of them have consigned themselves to that. Yeah.
My brother, always the best. Thank you, man.
Thanks, Marty. Nice seeing you.
It's amazing how it went down. And I still wonder what the hell they do with all those trucks. They were just... It's amazing. The ICE scenario is amazing. Like, so these immigrants come in under the Biden administration, they seek asylum and no one gives a damn. It's actually fascinating. And so they drive trucks, and I'm told they have a great reputation as truck drivers, as Joseph Patrick Murphy alluded to. And they work very hard. But then their license comes up for renewal, and I guess they thought it would be cool, and it's not, and now they'll be deported. There's a couple things that are fascinating about this, and one of them has to do with the situation in the trucking industry. They're desperately short of truckers. They're like 50,000 short of truckers. Now, I'm not suggesting that we give immigrants that are here illegally a free pass. But what I am suggesting is we're creating a bigger problem for ourselves because Americans don't want those jobs. They don't. The hours are crazy. The money's not as good as you think. And they'll take the jobs like that. And they work their asses off and they don't complain. And at the end of the day, they're good employees of these companies until now. So now what I'm told is they all show up at this license center, PennDOT. The locals see them. Now I don't know how the hell, how would locals know that they were all illegals from Uzbekistan, all the stands, as Joseph Patrick Murphy puts it. I don't know. But I have video of hallways of them. And my friends at ICE say there were up to 100 of them. And the parking lot had at least 100 trucks in it. And so they called ICE. They came in, arrested 13, what I was told. And I don't know what happened to the rest of them. And I don't know what happened to their trucks. But it goes back to the original argument about ICE, that their job was, as we were told, to arrest the bad guys, the rapists, remember that? The murderers, the drug dealers. And in this case, that's not what they were doing. They were arresting men who sought asylum. Obviously, that window of opportunity to get that asylum has expired. Obviously, they're here illegally. And so now they're gone. And the trucks are sitting in some parking lot in Catani. And now these companies can't fill that void and they can't get product delivered. ICE, by the way, for those of you who blame this on ICE, that's crap. These men and women are doing their jobs. Period. End of story. If you don't like that, that's you. But all they're doing is what they're told to do. And most of them enjoy the work. But what you have now is a dearth of truck drivers. Huh? So now when you can't get product delivered and they say we can't find drivers, now you can kind of say, then why are we jacking with these men and women who drive their asses off and cause us no problems? I don't know. There has to be a better way, a middle ground, some path to citizenship, rather than take them all, deport them, create a massive vacuum in truckers and say to hell with it. Big Ralph, go ahead.
Yes, sir. Stop granting these people asylum. They can make up any excuse they want. I'm tired of hearing it. Tell them to go to China or Russia and ask for asylum. They come over here and create problems. These folks do. I go on the truck stops and I see them. They drive. They hit folks.
Who
they
does?
Up the videos online.
Who does?
The folks that you're talking about, not those ones specifically, but stop granting these people asylum. Tell them to go to China, Russia, pick another country that's way closer. This is getting old. Sorry.
But, don't apologize. Yeah. That's how you feel, and that's how a lot of Americans feel. But this racist notion, and that's what you are, sir, if you think that these particular men are driving like maniacs and hitting people in truck stop is ignorant. It's ignorant. But if you think they should be deported, that's what the Trump administration decided too, and they're doing it. My only problem with that is if they are good drivers and they have a good record and they aren't criminals and they work their asses off, we should find a path for them to become citizens and pay taxes and drive trucks. Otherwise, sir, there is a 50 to 75,000 shortage of truckers in America right now. So if they arrested 13 Friday and they do it all over the country, it creates an even bigger problem. This notion that all of these men from these countries are criminals is a bald-faced lie, and it's ignorant. It is. Colin Dunlap is next, folks.